105.9 Academy FM.
Biz Connect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Biz Connect radio show with myself, Martin White, and today, as a one-off special, we have our fabulous co-host in the studio, Charlie Graham O'Gillam.
It's good to be back, Martin.
Charlie, lovely to see you. It's been a while, hasn't it?
It's been a while. It would seem that my day job has taken over most of my free time these days, but such is life, and it's fab to be back in the studio with our brilliant guests today.
It's great to have you. So, yes, on that note, we do have two super guests with us, as always. We've got a sort of housing, self-build development theme going on today, but also for the beer lovers out there, we have a very much a sort of brewing theme as well with our two guests. So without further ado, I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves. To my right, we have...
I'm Adam Roke. Martin, hello there. I'm an architect and a housing developer at Orchard Farm in Ashford.
Fantastic. We're going to be talking to Adam straight after the break. And to my left, we have...
Del Solly from Curious Brewery. I'm a former brewer and a current sales manager.
Fantastic. Del, welcome to the show, and thank you for bringing some fabulous samples with you today. Obviously, we won't be able to drink those on air, but we will enjoy them later.
Well, it's after 12, Martin, so why not? Well,
we could do, couldn't we? Yes. Yeah. So when we come back, as I say, we're going to have a chat with Adam to start with. Do stay with us. We've got a super show lined up. We're going to play a little bit of music, and we'll be right back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect,
the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning into the Biz Connect radio show today. As we were saying before the break, I've got my fabulous co-host, Charlie Graham O'Gillam, in the studio
Good
with me today.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Hi, hello. Charlie. Lovely to see you.
Thank you.
We also have two super guests. We have Adam Roke from Orchard Farm, and we have Del Solly from Curious Brewery with us in the studio. Guys, welcome. Lovely to have you with us today.
Good to be here.
Fantastic. Adam, if we can start with you. Orchard Farm, it sounds like, I don't know, it might be a dairy farm, it might be a pig farm, it might be some kind of arable farm set up, but it's not. It's a self-build development company that you've created. So tell us all about that, please, and your journey and how that all came about, if you could.
Yeah, okay. Well, as I've said, I'm an architect, and I've always worked in the housing sector, and I've always been disappointed at the standard of basic house builder product. Too often, they kind of start with the idea of where's the cars going to go. So they build the streets and they build a car park, and then, oh yeah, we better have some houses in there as well. And right at the very end, they put in some landscaping. Mm. And it's kind of by that stage, it's there's neither the money nor the inclination to make it look anything. And the houses themselves tend to be kind of pattern book houses that they build everywhere. So from Kent to Cornwall, it's the same house type. There's no intention to, or there's no effort spent in trying to reflect the location of where those houses are being built. So when I bought Orchard Farm, I wanted to deliver something different. It is a farm, or it was a farm rather. It's allocated for housing in the Ashford local plan. And so it seemed like a great opportunity to deliver something that was really interesting, that was a well-designed place that reflected where it is in East Kent, just on the edge of the North Kent Downs, and that reflects the specific qualities that make up East Kent. Mm. So
it's sympathetic to its landscape.
Absolutely right. Mm. So really, really, and I wanted to... what I wanted to focus on was the landscaping and the places within the development, so the space between the houses was really important. Mm. And self-build enables us to do that because all we do is we build the roads and the landscaping and the spaces between those houses, and our customers build the houses themselves. Yeah.
So you've basically got all the infrastructure in place, because
exactly
I believe we were talking before we came on air that you're looking to deliver the first 25 or start the first 25 plots this coming autumn. So that's a big planning sort of challenge, for want of a better word, I'm sure you've had to overcome with regards to getting the infrastructure in and getting everything ready.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've got outline consent for the first 25 dwellings. It is allocated, and the whole site's allocated in the local plan, so it will all be housing in due course. And we've currently got what they call the reserved matters application, which is basically what everything's going to look like, all the detail.
Yes.
And that's in with Ashford Borough Council at the moment.
So am I right in thinking then, Adam, that you'll put in all the sewage, all the kind of electrical, the gas connections, the roads, as you say, and then literally I can come along as a private individual and say, oh, I like the look of that plot, it's on a corner, it's wherever it might be, and buy it, basically, and build. But build within, presumably, a size limitation for that particular plot, because you don't want, you don't just want houses, you want gardens and green spaces.
Absolutely. So the way we've done the landscaping is, or the way we've arranged the whole development, basically, is around a series of courtyards, like farmyards, because actually East Kent is made up of a whole series of distinct farmyards set in the countryside. So that seemed to us to be a really really good way of reflecting the local vernacular.
Like a theme.
Exactly that. Mm. So there's a series of farmyards linked by lanes, and each of the plots is off those lanes. Yeah, and each plot will have a very specific footprint that you're allowed to build in, and a height limitation, and big roofs. If you look around East Kent, all the houses have got big roofs, like big barn roofs, big farmhouse roofs. Yeah. So that's kind of a key element that we want that we're requiring our customers to deliver.
Okay, so let's talk about customers. Mm-hmm. What does your kind of target market look like? You know, who's going to be interested in, you know, building their own house? You know, what's paint us a pen portrait, if you can, of who you see as your target market.
It's really broad, because one of my favourite statistics about self-build is that actually even the House Builders Federation, which is Home Builders Federation, which is the sort of trade union for the big house builders, even they recognise that actually only 32% of people would buy from their stock. Only 32% of people in the country would consider buying a new build house. Mm. So there's 70% of the population who haven't got whose needs are not being met, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's a big broad demographic, as they say. There will be a few people who'll actually literally build their own house, but they're very few.
Yes.
Most people will employ an architect and a builder, and they'll do the heavy lifting. Mm. And the self-builder, it's self-commission rather than self-builder, but the self-builder will make all the nice decisions, like what's it going to look like, what are the tiles going to be, what's the kitchen going to be like, how are the spaces going to be arranged. Mm-hmm. So that whereas, you know, with a standard house builder, it's that house, do you want it or not?
Yeah.
And you
yeah.
normally get the choice, would you want this coloured carpet or that coloured kitchen? But it's pretty much prefab, isn't it?
It's pretty minimal,
I mean, it's so exciting because you're offering your clients the chance to be project managers of their own build, which, you know, we went through a period of time with all these fantastic location, similar programmes and many others, not just that one, where, you know, so many people do now want to move towards Ashford, coming out of London, the train links are superb, and they can get more for their money, but now you're offering a client the potential to actually create their dream, which is superb.
And
be a real sort of controlling mechanism in that.
It's not quite grand designs, is it? There's more of a safety net there, I think.
Well, that's really important. Yeah. It's not, I mean, Grand Designs is a great television programme, and they make television. They're not really interested in what the house looks like. Well, I mean, a little bit, but the main thing is, you know, you've got to have a divorce, you've got to have, you've got to have...
Run out of money.
You've definitely got to run out of money. I mean, otherwise, forget it. It's done. We're not in that market. We're quite a different market, and we will help you. I mean, that's part of our unique sort of sales point is I've partnered with a Dutch firm, Steenvlinder, who are premier self-built developer in the Netherlands. Mm. And the Netherlands have been doing this for like 15, 20 years. So they're streets ahead of anything we're doing. So I've managed to partner with them, this is their first development in the UK. And we'll be, so our customers will get a customer guide that we will provide them, who will not necessarily know all the answers, but will know somebody who does know all the answers, and we'll be able to point our customers to them, and we'll have a network of experts, architects, sustainability consultants, Martin, and
main contractors,
who'll be able to help our customers to actually deliver what they want.
Yes.
Because as I say, not very many people will actually build their own house.
Yeah.
Not many self-builders are truly
but
builders.
The flip side of that, as you say, is, you know, 70% of people won't buy new build either because it doesn't fit their needs.
Well, exactly that. So, so you know, that 70% at the moment, they're looking at old houses and how can they make an old house, tailor it and make it work to fit their... And actually, mucking around with an old house is really expensive and difficult to do. There's a 20% tax issue on VAT on building work on existing houses, which you don't get with new build.
Absolutely.
So, quite often you end up with a bit of an eyesore as well, don't you?
If you take
a nice 1930s house and then you put some kind of dormer-style extension on the roof and you build the side of the roof up and it looks nothing like it did.
Absolutely. It can vary... who was it? Was it... the current king, wasn't it, who talked about carbuncles on the face of an old friend. that's the only area of the market that 70% of the population can actually
brilliant.
So how are you promoting Orchard Farm, and how can your or our listeners and future hopeful clients get in touch with you?
Well, on our website you can sign up for our newsletter, which goes out probably fortnightly, something like that. So yeah, do that, sign up. That's www.orchardfarmkent.co.uk. We're also on social media, on Instagram and LinkedIn and Twitter and all the rest of it.
Perfect, good. Well, look, we're going to leave it there. We're going to play a little bit of music. When we come back, Adam, I'd like to talk about, one of the other core kind of linchpins, if you like, of the development, and that's green spaces, community, sustainability, and how you're kind of weaving all of that into Orchard Farm as well, because I think that's very topical at the moment. So do stay with us, and we'll be right back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you so much for joining the Biz Connect radio show today. We're in the middle of a fascinating conversation with Adam Roke from Orchard Farm, who's telling us all about his self-build development in Kennington, in Ashford. Adam, it's great to have you with us today. It really has been quite interesting on a number of levels. I mean, I think it's fair to say that there's an insatiable kind of appetite, isn't there, and demand for housing in the southeast at the moment. And I'm thinking specifically about, you know, the new development that's going to be coming online shortly at Otterpool, Charlie.
Yep.
You know, the old Folkestone Racecourse, Ebbsfleet, we've been talking about off air. Where I live in Ramsgate, you know, on the edge of Manston, there's a big development going in. Deal, I know. You know, there's a lot happening as well. And I think these developments, by and large, they fit very much within that kind of that 70-30 model that you were describing in the first part of the show, where you know, they're just not right for a lot of people that are thinking about buying a new built home. And one of the other key things that I know is a part of Orchard Farm is your kind of ethos around sustainability and green spaces as well. So just tell us a little bit about that in terms of where that sits at the heart of everything that you're doing, if you can.
Yeah, okay, well, it really is important, sustainability, you know, is our children's future, our grandchildren's future. So we're really keen to make cars guests at Orchard Farm, and that's a really critical element, we think. Mm. So, you know, everybody has a car, so you've got to do something with it. So we will have, you know, cars are allowed, and you can, you know, you have to meet the county's parking standard anyway. What we're trying to do at Orchard Farm is to make all of the spaces shared space, so that the car is kind of like a guest. And actually, the important thing is the people. That as I mentioned before, that the houses are arranged around courtyards, and those courtyards are kind of like communal front gardens that the cars can drive through, but they have to be really careful because there'll be children playing, there'll be you know, all sorts of things going on, we intend. Mm.
Yeah.
And, you know, walking and cycling connections are really important. So, you know, you'll be able to cycle directly to Ashford Station off-road from Orchard Farm once the development's completed. So that's really a really important thing, and we're well connected with Kennington. We're putting in new pedestrian facilities in Canterbury Road so that the traffic slowed in Canterbury Road.
But you're also going to have dedicated green spaces, aren't you? That for
absolutely.
Me is the key thing, rather than just, you know, endless rows of houses, you know, that we see on so many modern developments. You know, you're actually going to have land set aside specifically as a green space within the development.
That's right. There'll be it's Orchard Farm. It's called Orchard Farm because it used to be Orchard, and there will be an orchard that we'll plant. Because all of the apple trees that were there sadly got blown away in the 1980s, but we'll be planting a new orchard at the heart of the development, and that'll be like a communal orchard that people can go and pick. So we were just discussing off air whether it was going to be quince or medlar.
Oh, I think it should be a vineyard, personally. There we go, Adam.
That is really on trend these days, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially with town. So then around the perimeter, the only really pleasant existing landscape is a ditch and boundary around the eastern and southern boundary, and we're going to retain that with all the trees and hedgerows that currently there, and also we'll be planting a new 1.2 hectare wild meadow around that perimeter to enhance it. That's 5 football pitches.
Wow.
Amazing. Which is
there's not many spaces locally with the developments that Martin's just mentioned that can offer that as well. It sounds to me like you're trying to develop create a community in itself at some point.
That's another really exciting thing about self-build is that because people are building their own house, you know, it takes a year to build your house. Optimistically.
Always add 6 months, I find, safe, yeah.
Fair enough. And while you're building your house, everybody else is building their house. And there are opportunities to meet. And we will hold meetings with all the residents so you can meet your neighbours and, you know, generate that community feel right from the start. You know, so before anybody moves in, there's a sense of it being a community.
Because that was one of the things that we all kind of had under COVID, wasn't it? You know, we all came out onto our doorsteps, you know, every Wednesday or whatever it was at 8 o'clock, and we clapped the NHS. And for many people, that was the first time they'd even seen their neighbours.
Well, that's right.
And we seem to have lost that again. It's kind of
gone, hasn't it?
We're
very British.
But again, that's the thing about, you know, if you've got your car parked in front of your house, you walk from your front door to your car door, and that's it. That's the only opportunity there is for interaction with your neighbours. If we've got a communal front garden that everybody shares, there's more, you know, and the necessity is there to actually talk to your neighbours.
Yeah.
You don't have to like them.
Yeah. But it really does work.
It's just talking to them.
It really does work. Because, I mean, I have a park, opposite me in Ramsgate, which has sort of had the benefit of a lot of heritage lottery funding to kind of, renovate it and you know, bandstand and kind of landscaping and everything else. And it really has brought the community together. Mm. It has now become a real focal point for the community. And I guess what you're talking about is a similar thing, just on a kind of smaller scale within a specific boundary. But it really does work because it brings together people from all walks of life as well. You know, it's not about, you know, what car you drive and where you live and how big your house is. You know, it just brings people together with a kind of a shared interest. And that's actually really, really incredibly powerful because then people take ownership of it and you know, they invest in it, and that for me is the key.
It's that thing of taking ownership, isn't it? Yeah, and, you know, when you've got a district council where 150,000 people live, and you know, and that's supposed to be a community. Well, you know, it's 150,000 people. You can't know 150,000.
Yeah.
But when it's 5, maybe 10 at the most, you know, it becomes a much more manageable human scale operation.
Yeah.
You can actually at least know who your neighbours are.
Yes,
and then that just sort of generates all sorts of benefits.
I agree, mental health is another thing. Absolutely. You know, we've just had mental health awareness week. And you know, I think being in that kind of environment, in that kind of space, it's just very calming. And you know, and being able to get your hands in the soil is actually incredibly kind of therapeutic. People don't realize. So let's talk turkey. How many plots are we talking about, and how much are they going to cost? It always comes down to money, doesn't it?
Well, there'll be 122 plots in total, and they range in size, or the house that you can build on them ranges in size from 85 square meters to 200 plus square meters.
So how big a house is that? 200 square meters.
200 square meters is a really good size 5-6 bedroom house.
Okay, so quite sizable.
Yeah, and 85 square meters is a good 2-bed house. On some developments, you might find that that's a 3-bed house.
Yeah.
So everything from starter homes to big family homes.
Absolutely, yeah. It's across the board in terms of the size of houses. There will also be some affordable housing that we're working on at the moment, trying to work. They may not be self-built because that creates problems for housing associations.
Yeah.
But so there's going to be a full range price-wise. We're not releasing prices until we release the plots, I'm afraid. But essentially, the plot price will equate to... So the plot price plus the house, the cost of building that house, will equate to the cost of a new built house, similar new built house in the area.
But you get something that is designed
for you.
Absolutely, exactly. Yeah. It fits you.
Yes,
that's the whole point. It's about designing a house that works for you, that meets your criteria from day one.
Yeah.
You don't have to do anything to change it or improve it, or you don't have to make any compromises. It's yours. It's what you want.
And then once you own or you've built your home, if you want to move up to a larger home and one becomes available, are you free to kind of, you know, buy and sell in the marketplace?
Absolutely. It's really important that we will be selling to owner-occupiers. So there will be a stipulation that you have to live there for 12 months. But yeah, you can. And I think one of the really exciting things is you can buy a plot on which you might be able to build 120 square metres, say. Mm-hmm. So you could build a 4-bed house on there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wanted to, just build a 2-bed house to start with, knowing that in the future you've got the right to extend it.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So,
and I know sustainability is quite high in a priority of Orchard Farm as the development itself.
Yeah.
How are you encouraging local trades, local main contractors like ourselves, for instance, to be able to be on, say, a preferred supply list? Are you managing that yourself?
Yeah, we are.
Trades that can contact you.
We're going to be creating a network for our customers of architects and other consultants, financial advisors, cost consultants, and so on. Most of whom will be local. And it will have local contacts with builders and the rest of it. We're not proposing putting subcontractors and contractors on that list because, generally speaking, the work will come from architects. But our customers can choose whoever they want, and we will be having open days where our network can meet our customers and vice versa.
Yeah.
So that's. We've run out of time, Sadie. Adam, just give us another shout-out for your website, if you can.
It's www.orchardfarmkent, or one word, .co.uk.
Fantastic.
Orchardfarmkent.co.uk.
Brilliant. Well, we'll definitely have to invite you back on.
Absolutely.
Once things are kind of, you know, once you've got a spade in the ground, come the autumn, as it were, and find out how it's all going. But for now, thank you so much for...
Well, thank you for having me on.
...for being on the show,
Sadie. It's been a pleasure.
Brilliant. We're going to play a little bit of music. When we come back, we're going to talk to Del from Curious Brewery. So do stay with us. We'll be right back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back to the second part of the BizConnect radio show today, everybody. I'm delighted to say that we have our second guest in the studio with us today, and that is Del Salhi from Curious Brewery. Del, great to have you on the show.
Oh, pleasure's all mine.
And thank you for bringing samples with you today, more importantly, which we won't be drinking on air, obviously.
Of course.
Because I'm sure that would break some kind of guideline. But... thanks for coming. Tell us a little bit about Curious Brewery. I'm sure a lot of people will have seen your building in Ashford. You can't really miss it. It's visually, I think it's fair to say it's an absolutely stunning building designed by, I think that was
Guy Holloway.
Guy Holloway, wasn't it?
Superb,
and award-winning on that basis. But tell us a little bit about how that all came about. How did Curious Brewery come about in the first place? What's the story behind Curious Brewery?
Would it be easy to say you're curious about it?
Very good.
Ba-dum-ba-dum-tsh. Sorry, too easy. That never happens. Right, so, well, Curious Brewery actually came about from the days of Chapeldown. So Chapeldown being an English, famous English winemaker, certainly one of the best in the region. They don't pay me to say that anymore, but I will attest to that. And naturally, from a winemaker, they decided at some point that they wanted to, well, kind of pan out into different avenues and thought, well, where what else do people drink? Well, apparently in the UK, as I've been here for a few years now, they like beer and cider, to say the least. So they naturally took the ethos of being from a winemaker and wanting to inject that into a new range. And so naturally, the brewery came about. The first brew started in 2011, but the first brewery, our first and only brewery, only opened in 2019. And the idea was, being from a winemaker, so we use things like champagne yeast in our Curious Brew Lager, which is our biggest seller in our original recipe. We also use Bacchus white wine yeast fermented in our apple cider, so it gives it more like a wine-like quality.
Quite distinctive taste, isn't it? The original Curious Brew, and that is the champagne yeast.
That's right. I think a lot of that has to do, though, with the different hop characteristics. I mean, not to get too, you know, scientific for your listeners here, but the idea is with hops, they're used not only for bittering, but aromas and certainly flavor aspects. So we take the best of the bunch. So we take hops from the UK, from the US, Australia, New Zealand, and by creating that different medley, like building, you know, like a recipe, you naturally get different elements. So whether you get tropical fruits on the nose and on the taste, you get a light bit of earthiness, a little pineness, a bitterness as well. It just creates an amalgamation of delicious flavors.
A fusion.
I like that. Yeah.
Well, you certainly haven't done things by half, have you? Because if you go inside the brewery, and you sort of, you know, in particular the restaurant area, and you look down, it's incredibly state of the art, isn't it? It's a very sort of modern, you know, brewing facility. I mean, you know, we've got a history of brewing in this country that, you know, you need to look at Shepherd Neame. Goes back to the 1600s, you know, in Kent. So, you know, but this has a very different look and feel about it. And is that important on a sort of quality level, on a kind of, you know, to get a kind of consistent product that has a certain quality every time you open a bottle?
Yeah, so we, all intents and purposes, we are a modern brewer. Mm-hmm. Like I said, our first brewery came about in 2019. As you mentioned to your listeners, and hopefully they all attend at some point to see the marvel that is Curious Brewery, we went for a very economical feng shui method of putting stainless steel, well, pretty much everywhere, and at a reduced cost, wink wink, nudge nudge. But the fact is, it does benefit in a few ways. It is the consistency aspect. So you know, your older brewers, you mentioned Shepherd Neame, you know, when they started brewing back in the day, you know, when my country was just a glimmer in some pilgrim's eye just a few years down the road, they didn't have a lot of luxuries, so like water being one of them. So the inconsistencies of each batch having to change from each day depending on what was there. For us, it's consistency but output. I mean, we basically can produce anywhere from about 200 to 300,000 liters at any given point. And that, just to convey that, that's a little under 3 million pints at any point in time. So just a few drops.
Yeah. And, you know, I sort of class you as a sort of a craft beer producer. And by that, I mean a sort of a local brewer. Which has become a real sort of phenomenon, hasn't it? I think it's fair to say. I don't know, over the last sort of 10 years or so, that's a market that's really kind of exploded. Why is that? Why have people kind of tapped into that kind of smaller, I should say, local kind of producer, that kind of craft beer feel? What's driving that?
Well, I'd have to say I'm going to have to wave my American flag. You can blame the Americans on that one. I mean, craft brew has been around for several decades now, but I think the surge has become more on the side of, well, my side of the pond, really mimicking but also really changing up different methods of production. So whether that's through wild fermentation, while that's actually bucking the trends of what a traditional lager or IPA can be, putting jam donuts in different types of beer. That's certainly not what we're doing, by the way, at Curious Brewery, just throwing it out there. So the idea is taking all, harnessing all these amazing cultural differences and aspects of production and infusing them into different methods. So for us, Curious is more of that kind of craft, but more premium style drink. So hence why we're still using things like champagne yeast in our beer, but also honing in on what's not only in our garden, so whether that's hops and malt and things like that, but kind of going maybe a bit further and far from other methods or other ingredients that we need for other methods. And I think also with the recent acquisition, we've actually brought in another brand recently called Wild Beer, which is actually from Somerset. And that whole region in the West Country is doing something that we're probably about a year or two behind down here in the Southeast. But we're catching up. And again, bringing brands like Wild Beer over will certainly help us attain that kind of parallel method of premiumization, but something that's a bit more crafty and fun underneath one roof.
And Wild Beer will be available at Curious Brewery.
Yeah, so we're currently, so we've been, so just to give the listeners a heads up, we brought the firm on officially in March of this year. We've been actively brewing the Wild Core range while still maintaining a wild fermentation and barrel age project in Somerset and brought over the Wild Beer team with that. And it's probably not only just more widely available, but probably as delicious as any drinker of wild beer will attest to. So yeah, a lot of fun things, to say the least, a Curious Brewery.
You can see Adam eyeing up the cans.
Licking his lips. Yeah. But what I like about this also is, I mean, obviously, you know, the more choice, the better it is for the consumer, ultimately. And I'm amazed by, you know, just going online, just do a search for your local kind of brewery. You know, whether it be in Folkestone or Ashford or where I live in Thanet. I mean, you know, I've got Gads in Ramsgate. I've got the Wantson Brewery at St. Nicholas. And you can just go online and you can order. You know, I'm having a party at the weekend or a barbecue, whatever it might be. You know, there will be a size of a particular beer that you really like to kind of to suit your needs. And that, for me, has been the biggest kind of step forward, not just the choice, but the kind of accessibility of being able to just, you know, order to brew almost, you know, and then it's ready to go. You know, you don't have to filter it or let it stand or anything. It's all that's done for you. You just literally tap it and plug it in at your party.
And then have a couple of drinks, right? Quality control.
Obviously.
You've been on the job, yeah.
So, you know, presumably, you know, you guys are into that as well. Online sales, people can... I mean, obviously, we'll find you in pubs, you know, and that's a key part of your job, I'm sure, just, you know, to go round and ultimately, you know, get an install in a pub locally. But people can go online and order it as well, can't they? And you'll deliver it, you know, to their door.
Yeah, so we do online deliveries, whether that's local or few and far abroad. So whether that's in the Midlands, North, certainly out West, and then also purchasing it in the actual brewery. So we do have a store located just in the restaurant. So there's a couple of options there. I would say as far as kind of dictating our route to market, at the moment, historically, Curious has always done more off-trade, so that's again like in your pubs, your restaurants, bars, that sort of thing, as opposed to on-trade, I should say, off-trade being more your retail space. I would say the dictation's probably about 80% is on-trade, 20% of that is off-trade. However, now with a new brand like Wild Beer, historically they've done more off-trade than maybe even on-trade, so I think again there's going to be parallels running inside. But we do produce and we do package predominantly everything that we sell from the brewery itself, so we have that ability to not only make sure that we're well stocked for on-trade, but certainly the off-trade sales as well.
Do you ship internationally as well?
So funny you mention that. Historically, Curious has never exported above and beyond. It was more Chapel Down's earlier days wanting to focus naturally on its heartland, which is Kent, and then allow it organically to some degree with a bit of, you know, nudging from time to time to grow into the UK. However, I'm happy to report we actually brought on a gentleman whose sole ability is to do not only retail but exporting, and we're now activating international sales for Curious. So so if you can't get a drink of Curious in the UK, don't worry, check your duty freeze Any vacation hotspots in Asia, I'm sure at some point.
Brilliant. I should look forward to that in Egypt this summer.
On Camelback with a Curious Brew. I'm right there with you, Martin. On a Monday, no doubt.
Brilliant. Well, look, we're going to play a little bit of music. When we come back for the final part of the show, I want to talk about some of the other things that are on offer at Curious Brewery in Ashford, because obviously we've mentioned briefly the restaurant, but there are brewery tours as well. So there's a whole kind of experience waiting for people out there. So do stay with us, and we'll be straight back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back to the final part of the BizConnect radio show today, everybody. We're talking with Dale Sally from Curious Brewery in Ashford at the moment. Dale, we've talked an awful lot about beer, which is obviously a subject very close to my heart, and yours, I know, as well, as a master brewer.
Yeah.
But for the foodies out there, you know, the kind of the experienced people, tell us what else is on offer at Curious Brewery in Ashford, because I know we mentioned it earlier, you've got a fabulous restaurant. Tell us about the menu.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, we have a full-size restaurant and bar upstairs, about a little under 200 covers at any point in time. As far as the menu, it's always changing, so we do try to focus on seasonal ingredients. Naturally, we have more kind of a gastro pub, so amazing fish and chips where the fish has been battered in our session IPA. I mean, it'd be rude not to. And a lovely new pizza oven as well, which becomes quite popular. As you imagine, beer and pizza, it's kind of a natural relationship. Yeah. And every Wednesday, by the way, five-pound pizzas, so talk about a steal in that with some delicious Nectar of the Gods, not being biased, on offer at any point in time. And actually, we're really in an amazing change. Besides bringing on wild beer, we're actually going to be reopening or kind of doing another reopening launch of the restaurant and taproom towards the end of June. So that'll cater not only to obviously coming in for a bite to eat and drink, but we're going to have a massive outdoor space with a mobile bar that you can't miss if you show up anytime soon. So keep an eye on the space end of June. Check the check our social media accounts. We'll definitely be promoting it.
So presumably you're open for corporate bookings as well then?
Yes we do quite a few corporate events. You can imagine a lot of business, quote unquote business, gets done with corporate clients when they come, but it gives an option to not only use the space, but also it takes a bit of an different angle of engagement for customers to come. And naturally we do offer tours both to the public and privately. Tours are operated publicly between Wednesday and Sunday. They start at 12 and end at 4, and they run every 2 hours. That can be booked online, £20 a person. That's five tastings, a complimentary glass, and probably some amazing dad jokes that I passed on to the last tour guide. So definitely come for the jokes. The drinks help, don't worry. They usually come after the drinks.
Will you have a bouncy castle in the new space?
I've actually requested not only a bouncy castle, but like a ball pit as well. So
brilliant.
Yeah.
Every corporate event should have one of those.
I'm not sure beer and bouncy castles are good bedfellows, Charlie.
Don't mock it till you've tried it.
We've got amazing cleanup crews, don't worry. It'll be fine. Yeah, yeah.
Great.
It's part of the job.
Fantastic. Now, what I like about you guys is everybody's like you. Everybody's kind of a character and smiley and happy. And so the staff are obviously... I don't know. It seems to be part of your kind of ethos. You want to make brewing curious, obviously, but you want to make it fun as well. Is that right?
I mean, let's put it this way. Life is short. I think everyone has to have fun in some regard. And also the natural ability with the brewery is there's so many different aspects. There's production, like you said. So whether you're in outside the brew house, you're at the restaurant, you're at the bar, you're just naturally having that ability to be engaged on so many different levels, which I have to admit, having come from a background that wasn't brewing and now find myself the last few years engaged with it. Every day is so unique and different, and we can have fun. You know, the subject itself has a levity to it. And I mean, who doesn't like trying beer and selling beer?
It should
or
be fun.
For fun.
Absolutely. Good. Tell us about the future. What have you guys got planned? I'm a bitter drinker. You don't currently brew a bitter, but I know you've got some ambitions in the cask ale.
Well, there's always one, isn't there? traditional bitter, mile and 10. I'm right there with you. Remember a camera all the way. We are actually engaging that space. So at the moment with wild beer, we do have a few of our options on cask. We've got one that's a passion fruit orange zest guava. Which I'm not going to lie, maybe isn't super traditional, but that's the fun that we can have with that range. We also do a salted caramel stout. that's on cask, which I have to admit, as more of a preference for keg, I actually prefer it on cask. Mm-hmm. Even with the Curious line, we have introduced some more like localized premium style drinks in cask, and I suspect there'll be a space, no doubt, for that. You'll just have to come to the brewery, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, and see what we have on offer. So
fantastic, brilliant. Right, Dale, lovely to have you with us today. Give us a shout out for the website. Obviously, people can order online. You're kind of on and off trade. So what's the best way to find out all about you? Brewery tours, restaurant, everything.
Right, for the Curious, it's curiousbrewery.com. And then for Wild, it's wildbeerco.com.
Fantastic, great.
Perfect, thank you.
Charlie, I think we've come to the end of the show. It's kind of rattled by again today, hasn't it?
It's gone incredibly quickly, yes. Yeah.
Well, we've had a lot of fun, and we've had two super guests with us, so thanks to Adam.
And we're all
Adam.
Still smiling as well. It's
and
hilarious
to Dale.
For a Monday.
I know.
It's brilliant.
I know. Well, that's because we've all got a case of beer to take home with us. So, what's not to like?
Exactly.
So thank you guys for being with us. It's been absolutely fascinating. We will be back, obviously, in 2 weeks' time with two more guests. But for now, I think all that remains to do is to say thank you very much to all our guests again. Well done, everybody.
Yes, thank you, guys.
Thank you to my co-host, Charlie.
Pleasure.
Thanks for coming back. And thank you to our listeners as well for tuning in today. We hope it's been a fun show for you too. So we'll be back in a couple of weeks. But for now, it's goodbye from us.
Bye.
105.9 Academy FM Folkestone.
BizConnect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.